Good morning. This is Jane reading to you from the Pantograph on a bitterly cold morning, the 27th of January, 2026. And since we're on the subject of bitter cold, obviously the big story is the fact that the week is going to stay pretty bitter. The forecast is for extreme cold to linger after the weekend snowfall. After a moderate snowfall blanketed the area over the weekend, officials say central Illinois residents should prepare for extremely cold temperatures that will persist through the end of this week. Quote, "It's going to be pretty cold through this upcoming weekend," said Nicole Albano, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Lincoln. "We're not expecting highs or lows to warm above freezing." McLean County saw a range of 2 to 4 inches of snowfall as the storm moved across central Illinois, while residents in Bloomington Normal saw a total of 4 inches, Albano said. According to the Bloomington Police Department, the city had 14 traffic crashes between Friday and Sunday, but none were serious or resulted in significant injuries that would have required transport to the hospital. Similarly, the Normal Police Department had 10 traffic crashes in town, but no serious or significant injuries were reported. Tazewell and Mason counties received similar snow accumulation to McLean County, with about 2 to 4 inches, while parts of Logan County saw up to 6 inches, including 6 inches reported at the National Weather Service office in Lincoln, said Albano. Bloomington Normal implemented parking bans to allow snow removal crews time and space to clear the streets during the snowstorm. Both municipalities lifted the bans on Monday, noting snow cleanup will continue as needed. As for the frigid temperatures, Albano said wind chills reached a low of minus 25 Sunday night, while temperatures hovered below freezing throughout the weekend. Albano said the extreme cold will stick around through this week with wind chills to stay pretty bitter. The cold weather advisory is in effect from 6 p.m. Monday to 6 a.m. Tuesday in McLean County, as well as most counties southeast of Bloomington in central and southern Illinois. Wind chills were expected to reach as low as minus 19 during the advisory period. Whether or not people plan to go out, Albano said, it's important to dress in layers, including wearing a hat, gloves, and a scarf to limit exposure. With wind chills and the negative temperatures, frostbite could set in as little as 30 minutes. As for traveling, Albano said it's also important to keep vehicles at least half full of fuel and to notify family members or friends if you're venturing out. She added that residents should ensure their furnaces are working well and keep their thermostats set high enough to make sure pipes don't freeze. Another top local story is from Bloomington Normal, where residents are protesting, denouncing the ICE raids after the second fatal shooting in Minneapolis. Ben Wodica hadn't planned to become a protester, but he's already been to 2 of the recent demonstrations held in Bloomington Normal in response to the uptick in violence related to federal immigration enforcement. After Alex Preddy, a 37-year-old intensive care nurse, was killed Saturday by U.S. Border Patrol officers in Minneapolis, Wodica said he believes protesting has become more than necessary. Quote, "I believe killing people is wrong, plain and simple, and there's no due process being given," said Wodica, 45 years old, of Normal. "Snatching people up off the street because of the color of their skin is just wrong." Wodica was among almost 100 area residents who, despite the freezing temperatures, gathered on the lawn between Veterans Parkway and Lakewood Plaza in Bloomington on Sunday. Many of those gathered held signs denouncing the actions of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Border Patrol, and the Trump administration. Preddy worked for the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and had previously participated in protests in response to an ICE agent fatally shooting Renee Good on January 7th in Minneapolis. According to the Department of Homeland Security, Preddy was shot after he, quote, "approached" Border Patrol officers with a handgun, but officials did not specify if he had brandished the firearm. Soon after the incident, bystander videos of the incident were released. Pretty can be seen with only a phone in his hand as he steps between an immigration agent and a woman the agent had shoved on the street. No footage appears to show him with a weapon. During the scuffle, agents appear to disarm him after discovering that he was carrying a 9mm semi-automatic handgun. An agent then fired multiple shots at Pretty. Pretty was licensed to carry a concealed weapon. Quote, "My feeling is that they're really out of control and this needs to be reined in. And what's happening in Minnesota is just beyond anything we've ever seen in American history," said Thomas Wilmich, an organizer with Bloomington Normal 50501. "The politicians need to step in and put an end to it. And if it means us speaking up, well, then that's what we have to do." Wilmich, 69 years old, of Normal, said he and other organizers did not have plans to protest this weekend, but after the killing of Pretty, they decided to hold the protest despite the dangerously cold temperatures and wind chill. According to a meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Lincoln, the Bloomington Normal area was expected to experience wind chills as low as 25 this weekend with temperatures below freezing. Other than protesting and making sure they are visible, co-organizer Brad Bell said he and others have also begun passing out flyers and whistles and providing training opportunities for residents interested in reporting ICE and defending their communities. Bell, aged 40, of Bloomington, also said the Bloomington Normal 50501 group has a Facebook page where people can learn more about events and public resources to educate themselves on their rights. Quote, "We're trying to get people equipped, trying to raise money for good causes. We're trying to do a whole lot of things, and we're not just standing out here waving signs." Olenka Moss, who is also an organizer with Bloomington Normal 50501, said she knows that not everyone can be out demonstrating right now, but people can always make their voices heard through small acts of resistance, like educating others. Quote, "It's disgusting and disheartening to see communities broken apart with needless acts of violence," said Moss, 33, of Bloomington. "Our peace is being taken from us." Sisters Chloe White, 28, and Hannah Harper, 33, of Bloomington, said they saw the recent reports and videos of Pretty's killing and other related incidents, and they decided it was time to be involved and connected with their community through protesting. "Contact your congressman. Contact your local representatives and urge them to defund ICE, to abolish ICE," White said. "Anybody could be next, and we're not safe from these thugs. They are not properly trained, and they are attacking random people who aren't even protesting." Harper said people should also be informing themselves with trusted and unbiased news sources and look beyond scrolling social media to know what is happening around them. Quote, "I'm genuinely scared for our future, and I feel like I have to do whatever I can to make it known that the people, the majority, are not okay with what's happening," Harper said. Matt Littwiller, age 45, of Bloomington, said it's been especially harder to watch the events unfold in Minnesota while he has family in the Minneapolis area. He said his family members have had to carry their passports everywhere, even though they are U.S. citizens. Littwiller said he is troubled by how the people working for ICE and the Border Patrol do not feel like they have to be accountable to the law, and they're creating fear in communities. "To me, it creates this society that is feeling fear rather than just not doing anything. We can come out here and express our outrage and hopefully start a movement in America," Littwiller said. Jan Reynolds, a member of the social justice team at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Bloomington Normal, said she and other members were just talking about Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and the civil rights movement, calling ICE and the Border Patrol's recent acts terrible violence. Reynolds, age 66, of Bloomington, said the violence and vilification of the victims from federal officials has left an eerie feeling. She said she believes immigrants, like all people, are necessary to this country and make our communities better. Immigrants help make us strong, and most of the immigrants that we have are law-abiding, tax-paying people, Reynolds said. We don't need ICE doing what they're doing. And here's some news from Springfield having to do with higher education costs. Higher education hike requested. State board calls for 4.6% more as Pritzker reins in spending. The board that governs higher education in Illinois voted Wednesday to request $2.7 billion in general revenue funding next year, an increase of $121.6 million, or 4.6%, over the amount lawmakers approved for the fiscal year, the current fiscal year. But that request came at the same time Governor J.B. Pritzker announced he was reducing this year's higher education budget by $30.5 million. That included an announcement that he would not release $29.5 million in higher education funding that lawmakers gave him the power to hold in reserve last May when they approved the current year budget. The move is part of an overall $481.6 million reduction in state agency spending authority Pritzker ordered to address what he called, quote, ongoing economic uncertainty driven by the Trump administration. Quote, we expect that most agencies will not see their funding requests fulfilled, and continued fiscal management in fiscal year 2026 will help ensure the ability of the state agencies to face the challenges expected over the next few years, the governor's budget director, Alexis Sturm, said in a letter announcing the reductions. Both the budget request and Pritzker's announcement came as disappointing news to union officials who have been urging the IBHE to pressure the administration into releasing the funds that have been held back this year. Quote, the Illinois Board of Higher Education, the IBHE, has failed students and working families once again, University Professionals of Illinois President John Miller said in a statement. At a time when Illinois students and families are struggling desperately to afford a university education, the board's fiscal year 27 budget recommendation today guarantees even higher tuition and fees and more student debt. But IBHE officials defended the request, saying it calls for investments to make higher education affordable for students in Illinois while recognizing the fiscal constraints facing the state. Quote, the board has approved a recommended budget for fiscal year 2027 that takes into account the state's fiscal projections, the fiscal realities of our institutions, and our students and families, along with the work needed to close equity gaps, IBHE Chairman Pranav Kothari said in a statement. Even in tight budget years, we must continue to prioritize higher education in Illinois. Overall, IBHE's budget request includes a $39.6 million or 3% general funds increase in operating funds for state universities and a $10.1 million increase or 2.4% for community colleges. The proposed budget calls for a $50 million increase in the Monetary Award Program, or MAP grants, the state's primary need-based student financial program. That would bring total MAP funding next year to $771.6 million. It also calls for a $5 million increase in AIM High grant funding, which would bring that program's total funding to $55 million. AIM High, that's an acronym, is a scholarship program that is both need and merit-based. According to IBHE, during the 2024-25 academic year, nearly 80% of Illinois students who qualified for Pell Grants, the federal government's primary need-based financial aid program, were able to attend public universities tuition and fee-free as a result of recent funding increases to the MAP and AIM High grant programs. Increased investments to the MAP and AIM High grant programs throughout the last several fiscal years have made our public institutions more affordable for students, and this budget recommends increased investment in both programs. IBHE Executive Director Ginger Ostro said that in a statement. Within the proposed budget for state universities, IBHE is requesting a $38.3 million increase in general operating funds, or about 3% over this year's approved funding. But the board is also recommending, as it has the last few years, that money be distributed under a formula that would prioritize institutions that serve more low- and moderate-income students who qualify for federal Pell Grants. How Illinois distributes its funding among the state's 12 public universities has been a subject of strenuous debate in recent years. Last year, the Illinois Commission on Equitable Public University Funding proposed legislation to overhaul the state's higher education funding system and replace it with a formula similar to the evidence-based funding formula used for K-12 education. That new formula would establish adequacy targets for each institution and give priority in new funding to those schools that are furthest away from their adequacy targets. Lawmakers held hearings on that proposal during the 2025 session. While IBHE took no official position on it, the bill stalled in a Senate committee mainly due to opposition from the state's largest institution, the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Robin Steens, executive director of the education advocacy group Advance Illinois and a vocal advocate of the funding overhaul, said in an interview that IBHE's proposal to distribute new money according to a formula based on student demographics would be a significant step in the right direction. Steens said IBHE has not taken an official position on the adequate and equitable funding proposal. Quote, but I think they are speaking with their feet, that they believe that we need to be on a path, and that path needs to include equity, she said. The IBHE's budget proposal will be forwarded to Pritzker and the General Assembly for consideration as they put together a state budget for the upcoming fiscal year. Pritzker is scheduled to deliver his overall budget plan to lawmakers on Wednesday, February 18th. And staying in Springfield, let's see what's going on in the Illinois House as they return for their spring session. The headline reads, as Illinois House returns, Democrats target Trump. Symbolic resolutions slam his administration. Illinois House Democrats kicked off their spring session last week in a mostly symbolic fashion, denouncing President Donald Trump's policies in a series of resolutions criticizing immigration raids and cuts to health care and child care programs. Quote, the session was an opportunity for us to emphasize how these policies in the federal government impact Illinois, House Representative Lillian Jimenez, a Democrat of Chicago, said. The Democrat-led symbolic resolutions targeted Trump's tariffs, excessive use of force by federal immigration agents, the freezing of affordable child care funds, and the expiry of Affordable Care Act subsidies. They even denounced the administration's push to acquire territory overseas while Illinoisans face affordability challenges at home. They all passed overwhelmingly over Republican objections. We basically did nothing but allow Democrats in the General Assembly to grandstand on things that are happening in D.C. that we have zero impact on, House Representative Jeff Kaiser, a Republican of Sycamore, told Capital News in Illinois. House Representative Jaime M. Andrade Jr., a Democrat of Chicago, kicked off the Wednesday session by calling out aggressive actions by Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, citing the killing of Silverio Villegas Gonzalez in Franklin Park in September last year and Renee Good in Minnesota early this month. Andrade filed House Resolution 622, which condemned the use of excessive and deadly force by ICE agents and called for an independent investigation into the Department of Homeland Security for killings and deaths of detainees in custody. Democrats also called for the resignation of DHS Secretary Kristi Noem over her handling of immigration enforcement. Democrats then focused on the impact of federal funding cuts. Jimenez filed House Resolution 621, which called for the immediate unfreezing of federal child care funds, saying the session was a way to signal to constituents what their priorities are. House Resolution 620 called on Congress to reinstate health care subsidies that expired on December 31, 2025, and end what they called the, quote, Trump health care affordability crisis. Democrats voted to approve House Resolution 624, filed by Representative Lisa Hernandez, a Democrat of Cicero, condemning, quote, Trump's efforts to acquire territories and titles overseas while leaving working families at home to pay the bill. She told Capital News Illinois that taxpayer money was being used to fund operations that could be used to prioritize the needs of Americans. It came just hours after President Trump spoke to global leaders at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland on Wednesday. He made the case earlier that day for why the U.S. should own Greenland, a self-governing territory under NATO ally Denmark. But the resolutions met fierce pushback from House Republicans, who slammed the proposals as symbolic rather than productive and characterized them as theatrics. Only one actionable joint resolution passed, which confirmed the House and Senate will convene in a joint session on February 18th for Governor J.B. Pritzker's budget address. Georgia Epifaniou and Erica Tolfo are graduate students in journalism with Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism and fellows at its Medill Illinois News Bureau, working in partnership with Capital News. Those are the two journalists who filed this report. Now for some news on how turmoil in the larger world is affecting people here in Illinois, precisely in Chicago. Quote, we're desperate for regime's end. Iranians in Chicago struggle to contact home amid protests. The first question Mina Rajae asks her family when she finally is able to reach them back home in Iran is, how many of us are killed? It's the grim reality for Rajae, a computer science student at Northern Illinois University, and others in Chicago's Iranian community who are facing uncertainty about their loved ones after deadly anti-government protests erupted in late December. Since then, it's been nearly impossible to contact those in Iran after a communications blackout, Iranians in Chicago say. People in the U.S. are unable to call into Iran, though people there may call out, they said. Even so, the calls are usually brief and vague out of fear of the government, that the government is monitoring them. We actually don't know what's happening to our family, Rajae, 30 years old, of Iran, who attended a rally last Saturday in Chicago against the Iranian government's crackdown. We don't know whether my brother is alive or not. Since then, she has spoken to her mother for a brief 2 minutes and knows that her brother is, in fact, unharmed. Rajae is one of about 9,000 Iranians in Chicago stuck in a communications blackout and feeling helpless as the crackdown in Iran continues. She joined about 60 people gathered in downtown's Congress Plaza on Saturday night at the rally organized by Chicago for Iran. Despite the freezing cold and fears of immigration enforcement, they marched toward Federal Plaza with roses and electric candles as organized passed out hand warmers and hugs. Many are looking west for help despite a history of failed interventions in the Middle East and new travel restrictions from the U.S. on Iran. In late December, thousands of protesters in Iran took to the streets against the government of Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and worsening economic conditions. More than 4,000 were killed, and the U.S.-based human rights activist news agency said, and communications services, including internet phone text services, were shut down by authorities on January 8th, although some communications have been restored. On social media, President Donald Trump expressed his support for protesters in Iran, telling them that help would be, quote, on its way. Iranian patriots, keep protesting. Take over your institutions, he posted on Truth Social on January 13th. They will pay a big price. I have canceled all meetings with Iranian officials until the senseless killing of protesters stops. Help is on its way, said President Trump. Yet Iranians and nationals from 18 other countries remain largely banned from travel to the U.S. since an updated June policy took effect. On January 14th, the State Department announced it would suspend the processing of immigrant visas for citizens of 75 countries, including Iran, furthering travel restrictions. Rajaie came to Chicago 4 years ago, fleeing Iranian government censorship that affected her everyday life. As an English student in Iran, she could not express her views freely because she could be considered anti-Islam, she said. In 2022, she got her master's degree in English studies at Northern Illinois University and is pursuing a second master's in computer science. She dreams of seeing her brother and parents at her upcoming graduation this year, but the travel ban has made that impossible. She cannot travel to Iran and her parents cannot travel to the U.S., she said. If I leave the country for my visa, I cannot come back. Before coming to the United States, she attended protests in Iran to advocate for greater freedom. Now she rallies from the relative safety of the U.S., but she does not know how long that will last after graduating. I don't even know whether I'm welcome to stay here anymore, she said. Immigrant advocacy groups have denounced the June travel ban as discriminatory against Muslim-majority and African countries. In June, the National Immigrant Justice Center called the ban a, quote, cruel and racist proclamation. NIJC policy director Azadeh Erfani said the Trump administration's travel ban on Iran and other immigration policies have made it harder for Iranians to obtain protection in the U.S. or reunite with family. The reality is the travel ban is layered on top of other bans, Erfani said, referencing earlier restrictions on border crossings. She is also worried about Iranians possibly getting deported. The U.S. is so focused on getting them out of here, she said. Last year, the Trump administration deported a plane full of Iranian citizens. As of September, around 300 Iranians were in detention, and about 2,500 faced the threat of deportation from the U.S., the New York Times reported. At last weekend's rally was Farzad Ahmadpour, who left Iran 20 years ago, but still remembers the bazaar in his hometown of Rasht, where he used to buy vegetables. It's now destroyed, he said. The 57-year-old said he constantly checks his phone for news on his family in Iran, including his father, who has cancer. He barely sleeps, he said. As of last Saturday, it had been more than a week since he was able to check in on his father. I cannot pick up the phone and ask them, are you doing okay? Are you still alive? Ahmadpour called for an end to the repressive regime in Iran, even if it meant a U.S. intervention. We are desperate, he said. Chicago for Iran co-founder Sepi Dasanie said. And she wakes up in the morning and cannot breathe. She has struggled to speak with her family and other loved ones in Iran. In 1979, the country witnessed an Islamic revolution that overthrew the Shah of Iran and replaced the monarchy with a theocratic government. Iran's supreme leader, Khamenei, 86, has been in power for the last 37 years, leading a largely repressive regime. People have been calling for change. In 2022, the Women Life Freedom Movement gained international attention when 22-year-old Mahsa Amini died after being arrested by Iran's so-called morality police for improperly wearing her hijab, sparking large-scale protests. Now the protests seem to be geared toward a systemic change of the current regime. It's complex and really spread out this time, said Kaveh Ehsani, associate professor of international studies at DePaul University. It seems like protesters are objecting to the very existence of the Islamic Republic. Many Iranians in Chicago also say they are fed up with the government there. People want regime change, said Chicago for Iran co-founder Tirdad Kianmesh, noting decades of economic mismanagement, human rights violations, and political repression. They are incompetent to run the country. Yet, should the regime come to an end, Ersani wonders what it will be replaced by and if the new regime may be worse. He wonders if a U.S. intervention can bring more strife to the country, like in the case of Iraq. He considers the possibility of a civil war. You can't just say, let's kick out these people and everything will be fine and dandy, he said, noting the U.S. intervention in Iraq that helped prop up militant groups like the Islamic State. It won't be. If anything, it would be a lot more disastrous. Ahmed Rehab, executive director of the Chicago Office of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, said he had little trust in the U.S. government's hand in Iranian affairs and called the travel ban on Iran and other countries a debilitating punishment for ordinary people. Dina Delpazir, a civil engineer from Iran who was at the rally last weekend, said her biggest fear is when the internet comes back on. We're going to hear all the names and we're going to see all the faces, Delpazir said, of the people who were killed. I bet a lot of my friends won't be here anymore. At the height of the protests in Iran, Sania's friend in Iran was able to send her a voice message. From her home in Chicago, Sania could hear the gunshots through the phone and anxiously texted him back, asking if he was safe. The message still shows as unread. We have not heard from him.